Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and with us in studio is Rick Solis. Rick is a fellow investor and property manager and property finder and also a pretty darn good teacher. Rick, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
Maybe we'll touch on the investor side. When did you, I think you and I met at a seminar I was giving, and then you started buying and holding and met, I think, Andrea at that same.
Well, at the same time, she had Blockbuster type business in my city where she rented out books on tape, like Tony Robbins
type. Yeah.
So you can go there for $3 and rent like a $500 seminar. So I think that was like probably 2001 or two.
Mm-hmm.
I heard you first speak at Nick Manfredi's group in Corona. So right as one of his first meetings. So I think that was the early 2000s.
And usually when I hear about partnerships, they really don't work out. And yours really has worked out. So what was the mix that made that work? I mean, probably both brought really a high level of skill, but maybe in different areas.
Yeah, we actually, we complement each other really well because there's a lot of things that I can't do that she's amazing at. And I didn't a lot of the knowledge and the experience in the appraisal part. And then just, you know, I took quite a beating in the 90s with that first batch of property. So I had all of that experience. So that's how we met. And I was, at the time, I was still buying, fixing, selling, you know, one or two houses a year. So, and then she didn't have any of that knowledge. So that helped that I'd been through it a few times.
Okay. But you weren't doing the business really too much at the time then, was one or two a year.
Yeah. I was an appraiser that just did a part-time deal that fell in my lap, and I was doing a lot of note investing, and then, heard you speak at Nick's group, and you were selling tapes back then. It was so long ago. And you had four seminars altogether. You had two with you, and I bought those two, and I liked them so much the next day I drove to your office and bought the other two. I think I even had to grind you for a discount. I'm like, if I buy this last one, can I get the other one for free? So yeah, that was a tough discount. You weren't much of a discounter on your seminar guys back then.
No, I'm still not. That's funny. I don't even remember that, but that's okay. But that's what year was it? Obviously, we're about to have a crank in price.
Probably 2001 or two.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's Andrea's first Andrea. How do you say her name?
I don't know.
You always say it. I think it's
Andrea. Andrea. Not Juan. Yeah. I don't think she cares.
I hope not. Forgive me, please. Anyway, how did you end up buying properties? Because there's no REOs. So this is all being bought directly from...
Yeah, it was just mailer. It was the same. It was just a mailer. We just, we started doing that mailer, and I forget the exact numbers, but say we were sending out 1,000 a month. For a few months in, we were getting nothing, and we're just spending time and money on this, and I was ready to tap out. And that's my problem. I'm always ready to jump real quick. I'm like, no, this is not working. I'm out. And she was like, nope, we have to keep going. And so we kept going, and eventually we started buying them, and we just kept going and started increasing the mailing volume, and we started buying lots of houses. I mean, there was a time we were sent out, seemed like a couple thousand a week, and we were buying, you know, probably four houses a month at the peak there.
And who ended up taking the phone calls?
We put both names on the mailer. So she would get half and I would get half. And usually there's like half people that don't want to deal with women. And I got those calls, and half people that don't want to deal with men. And she got those calls.
Yeah, that's
worked out amazing. We didn't plan it that way, but that's the way it worked out.
One of the things that we've done, because you told me that, we actually now have about 20 letters in a boot camp. And you pick up little things like that from some of them where we go, look at that. So it speaks Spanish.
Yes.
Men, women speak Spanish or speak Mandarin or whatever. Another, depending on where it is, you go, that's really smart.
I never would have thought that would be the case, because especially the men, like, not wanting to deal with women thing. I'd always heard that from women. I was like, you guys are exaggerating. You know, what? Come on. I saw that take place time and time and time again. They would call if they got her on the phone, they called her by accident, they would not deal with her. They would just give her the message to call me. And it's like, wow, I mean, she's negotiating these things. I mean, she makes stuff happen a lot faster and better than I do, but they would not deal with her. They would just go straight to me. And it felt like being back in the 50s. I mean, really, like where you had to bring your husband if you're going to buy a car, if you're the wife type. But that's, you know, a lot of men have that mindset.
But what's interesting about what you discovered, if you really had just one or the other of you, you may in fact have cut your response by half, because that would have been something they decided before they even attempted a call. They would have just not called half of the time.
Absolutely.
That's pretty interesting. Ultimately, when you're dealing with people that own something, why do they end up selling at a discount?
Most of ours were purchased they all sold because of a problem. And most of the time it was the person living in the property was the problem, or they were out of the area, or they were having problems with like the city or a code violation, that type of thing. Somebody breathing down their neck. But most of them were purchased because of some sort of deadbeat relative in the house that just hadn't paid rent in years. Some of them decades, like they've just been there forever. And they just family just takes advantage of family.
I asked that question to Mike Cantu one time for lunch. Sometimes I just ask him questions. I said, what's the common theme from most of your purchases? And he thought about it for a day and called me back and said the same thing.
Wow.
So if that's a mailer you could create, you know, do you have a deadbeat relative living in your house?
We'll kick them out and videotape it for you so you have something to laugh about at Christmas.
That may be the ticket. In that era, though, because prices were going up, most people were making money on that sale.
Yeah, everybody was making money. The people selling it to us were making money, and we were making tons of money. And if we actually made a bad buy back then, we could just sit on the house for 6 months, and the market would save us every single time. There was some just nasty stuff we bought that we shouldn't have bought, but we did buy, and it worked out really well.
Those markets are very forgiving. And also, now you were buying and holding most of this.
We were buying and holding until we noticed that, it's so hard to get a deal, and we'd sell it, make 20 grand, or there was a few that we'd try to sell and they'd fall out of escrow a couple times and we make like 60 or 70 grand. So after a while, we found that it was much more profitable if we could get them with a paying tenant to just sit on that thing for 12 months and a day and then sell it. Or you know, sometimes 2 years, but we didn't sit on them too long, but we tried to at least get to long-term capital gains tax rates or 1031 exchange, being able to have the ability to do that. So a lot of them we stayed a year.
Did you by and large exit at the right point?
Yeah, we sold probably 80% of our inventory, and all of the worst problems we were done by 2006.
Okay.
Sold everything in Barstow and I was gone. That is a town you can make a fortune in the right market.
And get wiped out.
I had a couple I loaned on and I had to foreclose and I got those back like a year too late. And it's like, man, those turned into a debacle.
Yeah, you sort of have line extension. You do dabble in some stuff, and that's one I've never bought. I've never done. You buy existing notes at a discount. And what's... If somebody's looking into that, there's websites now, right, where that's an ongoing thing?
Yeah, I go to, well, I don't do it anymore because they've changed the law so much with the Dodd-Frank that it's made it so difficult. So I haven't purchased any recently. There's a huge learning curve now and a lot of paperwork you got to cover on that. So I haven't, but I'm considering biting the bullet, learning all that, complying with all the new regulations and doing it again. But the website I go to is FCI, like Frank Charlie Isabel exchange.com, and they list tons and tons of mortgages, some performing, some not performing, all over the country. And that's where I go when I'm looking. I mean, there are better deals to be found out there, but this one, I mean, they're just all in one place. Otherwise, notes are pretty hard to find. I mean, it's not easy to find, you know, discounted notes for sale.
I'm always suspicious. I always think, okay, why am I having the privilege of buying this note? Because there's a term, scratch and dent, and you just think, okay, something's wrong with this that I don't know.
That's true. It happens a lot, too. So you got to do your homework. Usually, the problem with buying a note is, you see, you put a $200,000 loan, you get it for $100,000. Once you put your 100 grand in there, your 100 grand is stuck. I mean, you can't take that to a bank and borrow on that. I've tried many times. There's nowhere to take that asset and get any of your money back. So a lot of times they have to sell it because they need their money.
Yeah.
Other times, most of the time, they're selling it, especially the non-performing stuff, because they don't want to foreclose and take the property back.
The note holder. Now, are most of the notes that you dealt with from institutional owners or private owners?
All of my loans, probably, I think I've purchased maybe a couple hundred over the last 15 years, and I would say 99% of those all came from institutions at one point. So a lot of them were seconds and, you know, equity lines of credit type loans. And then those were sold off to, you know, after they weren't performing, sold off to an individual that usually resold them to me.
Most influential educator outside of the real estate world?
Outside of the real estate world, I read so many and I like so many, but I really like... I have to get myself motivated a lot. And so the guy that always did that for me is Zig Ziglar. I love okay. that guy. And I love that, just the weird way he talks. And I'm always drawn to people with weird dialects or accents. So I love Sling Blade Movie and I love Zig Ziglar because he's just that weird country twang when he's talking.
Have you ever talked to him physically?
No.
Okay.
No,
I actually called him up like the first time I listened to one of his seminars, why I thought I could get a hold of him. I called him and got the number, called him at home. He picked it up.
He took your number. See, I would never have the courage for that, but I wish I would have.
He was, he lives in Dallas or something, right?
In yeah,
Plano,
yeah.
Texas or something. Yeah.
How did you get his home number?
I just got information. I literally just called up and got information.
Two Ziglars in the whole state of Texas.
Yeah, I guess he wasn't trying to hide very well. So yeah, I just called him up and he said, yeah, that's accent and everything. One of his favorite stories for me is he was not raised with wealth.
No, he was dirt poor.
And he apparently had a friend that he got into the clubhouse pool and got kicked out. And when he got some money and built his own home, he built a pool with an arrow, which was his trademark. And it was 1 foot longer than the pool at the country club.
That's hilarious.
I like that story. Yeah, he's a neat man, and that concept is valuable. You can get everything you want in life if you help other people get what they want.
It really is, and I just like he always took the high road. So I don't think he never struck me as the type of guy that did like shady business.
No.
So I like that about him.
Yeah. No, that was definitely an early mentor. The difference for me between him and Jim Rohn is the pace. Ziglar was like he was plugged into 240 volt. And
yeah.
I remember thinking, especially as a teacher, when I listened to him, I really thought, well, I'll never be a teacher. Because if that's the prototype, I'm not going to ever be that. When I heard Rohn, I was like, well, wait a minute. He's sort of sedate compared to Ziglar.
Yeah.
Because Ziglar's doing the, you know, and he was more of the door-to-door sales guy. He sold the cookware and everything.
Yeah, he did.
I definitely liked him, and I didn't know that about that you liked him. What about real estate educators as far as the most, you know, influential?
You know, I always listen to your stuff, especially on the timing stuff. And I don't listen to, because I studied a ton of real estate in the 80s and 90s, and I don't think I really read any more real estate books anymore. I mean, there's really not that much to it. I mean, there's a lot, but once you learn it, you learn it, and everybody else is just kind of repackaging all the same stuff. So I would say back in the 90s, the guy that I liked a lot that helped me out, I can't even really remember his stuff so much, but I think he went to jail. So in fact, he is in jail, but I liked him a lot. He was really good. Wade Cook. Wade he had some really good stuff before he went to jail. And then I liked Robert Allen. I read a lot of Robert Allen stuff. But that guy is, I think he's always just trying to sell you the next thing. So it's more of, let me give you a little nugget, and then I'm going to sell you something else.
Well, you know, that's one thing that, you know, we've been offered 4 TV shows for the Fix
house, buy, fix, and flip.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I don't like the model because I'm a really bad faker. If there's anything I had to do for drama, I would just say, well, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, I think that would flop. And then, yeah, I think the numbers are always so skewed that so they make it look like you've made $50,000 on one deal and, you know, really they made 10 or 15, which is still great. But you get a lot of people thinking they're going to make 50.
But then they buy, one thing it does is really make the education those people provide very expensive. So that's the one thing that's difficult to watch is when you are willing to share what you know, and then somebody else is, you know, charging $50,000 for something that you're going, wow, no kidding.
And that, yeah, and they're not even providing very good stuff. And yeah, $50,000, those guys are trying to upsell you to the next $50,000 too. So
yeah. And it's that damages our industry. You know, that to me, that's not very helpful for people. But, you know, I've been fortunate when I noticed Tony Alvarez, for instance, you know, when getting him involved in speaking, to me, that was a big deal for our industry for a while because yeah, I mean, he did a good job. You do a really good job. I know you don't give the credit, but no doubt about it, we take surveys every time. You're the number one section everybody loves.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Every time I come out, I think, man, I messed that up. I wish I would have done this,
no,
and that.
No, everybody loves it. So, and Tony, I mean, he'd never spoke in front of an audience before. And I just knew that was going to be lights out, though. And Mike Cantu.
Yeah, they're all amazing.
Yeah, but, you know, they've really done the stuff. And that's, our business seems to be really accepting of, okay, you're nervous speaking, but wow, your material is really cool. And that's at the end of the day, you know, that's they're getting somebody that's gone through this stuff for real. And I think we can pick up the difference. When I was, my brother used to listen to all the stuff that was on tape or on TV, and he would give them to me. And, you know, I'm in the middle of doing the business, and every time I touch a house, there's a story, a personal story where there's characters living in the house or something's going on. And this reads as pristine as if it came out of...
Yeah, there's no problems in their deals. Everything's perfect.
So I remember telling my brother, I said, to be honest, I don't think they've ever bought a house in their whole life.
A lot of them haven't.
Well, I won't say the name, but one of the speakers that was on TV, him and a partner, did that for a long time.
That was the guy I bought the thing from. He has a winery now.
Okay.
He never bought any property.
Well, I happened to be... up north, I was doing a seminar, and I get picked up by a limo, and he's in the limo with the lady that's promoting me, and I went back to what I had said to my brother, and this was the guy, you know, and I said, what's your background? You know, how did you get into this stuff? And he said, we attended a seminar, and, you know, we wanted to know how to buy houses, and everybody ran to the back of the room and bought the stuff, and he said, so we bought the guy out. We bought his stuff.
Oh, really? They just bought the seminar business.
Yeah. They didn't know any more about it. One was a framer, and the other guy was a drywall guy. And that's
might not be the same guy that I bought my seminar from, too. But the guy that I bought mine from, the guy in Hawaii, I don't think he bought any houses. And he does wine now. He's got a vineyard up in Northern California. The other guys that I really like, there's a bunch of guys in Florida, and I forgot them to mention them, but John Shaw is really good.
Yeah.
No nonsense, low cost. I mean, if you're not going to be a take massive action type of guy and just want to crush the world, but you still want to get into the business, you can just follow his formulas and the way he does things, and you can make a nice chunk of money and be very well off. And it doesn't cost a lot to buy his books or take his classes.
And very methodical in the sense of one house at a time.
Yeah, and that's what he does for a living. He buys houses. So, I mean, I like the guys that do what they say, not instead of just the guys that, you know, don't do it and they're just selling seminars.
Yeah, there's a pack of them in Florida that sort of taught forever together.
Oh, yeah.
Napier and...
Peter Fortunato's really good. I think Jack Miller's one that Mike Cantu really liked. I think he passed away recently. But there's one other guy, I can't remember his name, but he's hilarious. He's got a weird dialect, too. He's a country-speaking guy that I love.
Which one is it? Napier? It's,
Jimmy Napier.
Yeah.
Jimmy Napier.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun to listen to.
Yeah, that's, you know, Jack Fullerton, that's at the Nixon Library event, we gave him the first Roney Award. And I just, he's been sort of one of those quiet influences on a lot of people. He always had that investment club, and he never had any agenda. It was never for profit.
Yeah, he just wanted everybody to do well.
Yeah, and that was pretty cool. So, That was we actually asked the Roan Foundation to approve that award so we could use Roney because he was influenced by Jim Rohn.
Oh, that was nice.
Yeah. I don't know. Were you there that night?
No, but I watched it.
Okay.
So I would be there, but I don't want to get in a tux.
Oh, my God.
Every year, you got to wear a tux. That's why I would be there. Well, two things. It's on my anniversary, so I'm usually out of town.
Oh, well, there you go.
I only take one trip a year with my wife, and it's always that last week of October, and I hate wearing a tux. I went one time. I got the tux, and it just, the tux.
One night in the tuxes, that's it, huh? All right, how about property management lessons? I didn't know you started so early. So what are some of the big lessons you've learned over, you know, since you've been, like, 20?
The things that I've learned is, the biggest thing is, and this happens a lot, is you'll get people that show up, and they need to move in right now, and they've got cash in their pocket, and they've even got 2 months security deposit, that person will 100% of the time be a mistake. You take that tenant, you are going to lose your shirt and you're going to regret it. I've rented to that tenant many, many, many times and it's never worked out well. The last tenant I took like that turned my house into a marijuana grow house and with a septic tank, and he ripped out the toilet and was flushing dirt down the septic tank. So, I mean, that cost me thousands of dollars to fix all that. And I had to evict them. And it was just one thing after another. So that is always the worst tenant. The other thing is if they're telling you a lot of stories coming in, like reasons for their problems in life, those are always the wrong tenants to get. And then you have to make sure that you can get to talk to their current landlord and their former landlord. And if you can get to the one before that, even better. But the former landlord's really the one. You don't want the current one as much as you want the former one.
Because he might want to get rid of them real bad.
Absolutely. And the thing that they do now is the landlords, they tell you is their landlord is a lot of times their uncle or cousin or brother. So you have to make sure that who they put down as the owner of the house is actually the owner, and all that information kind of matches up. But I mean, if you're on the lower end rental property, those tenants, they're pretty sharp. And they're a lot of them are professional tenants that are just out there to stick it to you if they can. So, I mean, you got to be on top of your game. And a lot of times we will deal with maybe 20 people that call about the house and 10 people see it. And we're picking out of the 10 the best one. You know, we're not like never go with the first one or rarely. So you have to do a lot of digging.
And you're involved in the process. You're not delegating this to a property management company?
No, usually I have some stuff with property managers, and I'm not opposed to that. In fact, I like that. I prefer that. But if there's not enough cash flow in the property to warrant that, then, you know, you got to get involved.
Do you feel that if you delegate it to a company, is that after you've already done the rental up yourself and had the management, or do they instigate the whole process?
No, I've done both, but usually when I use property manager, it's just something I don't want to deal with or it's far away, so they do the whole process. So, okay. I mean, that works really well, but it's going to take longer to get a tenant. They're not as motivated, and things don't get done as well as you do it, but, you know, that's the price you pay for delegating.
Are you asking them their process? So, okay. How do you make a decision that says this is the person?
They always bring the tenants to you. So they weed them out, they make sure they qualify with them, and then they bring you that tenant and say, you know, this is what we got. And then you ultimately, as the owner, you get to choose who moves in.
Right, but their process, you know, if they have a guy that shows up with $2,500 in cash and their stories.
Do that. Yeah, they run credit. They run credit, and they verify rental. I mean, they check all that. And so you want to make sure you get a property manager that just doesn't rent to the first guy with the wad of cash.
Okay. Half a minute left. Any property type so you go, this is a problem from the start?
I don't like property that is not typical for the area. So like I was talking to an investor that they got an A-frame house in an area where there's no A-frames, and that's just an undesirable inventory. So I don't buy anything weird. I don't buy anything that's unusual for the area unless it's good. And I don't buy anything with location problems.
Okay.
I stay away from all that. Unless the market's exploding, then I'd buy those things.
Okay. Rick, thanks for joining. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.